3D6 down the line.
Okay, that is episode 66 in the books. Well done, guys.
That was super fun, man. I really enjoyed that. I was invisible, or I was blind and chained up for the entire session. That was fantastic.
Mike's bringing the same attitude he brought Garalad to us right now.
Hey, you nailed it on the role play, though, man. Nailed it.
I got to do my whole speech. I got to do my whole speech that I had like prepped it for Garalad in the shower. No, wait, I didn't get to do that. I'm sorry. Yeah.
I feel your pain there, Mike, because I had a whole thing with Garalad with the torture thing too.
Go ahead, guys. Yes, ahead.
Now, man, let's just workshop it. So, I don't like pain.
I had a I of course would not want to offend any sensibilities, including my own, by depicting gratuitous depictions of torture, obviously. So that was right out the window. And we had discussed this on the week prior that wasn't going to happen. But I had like a little mini like sequence of events that would sort of occur mechanically based upon like what Garalad wanted to know. Right. Mm-hmm. And then how you responded, Mike, like what you were going to throw back in his, like, first thing he was going to do was he was going to attempt to charm you. Right.
Right.
And if he succeeded on that, the rest was easy. You know, it was if you failed, or if you had succeeded on your saving throw, then he would have had to resort to actual torture. And then it was going to be a question of how were you going to resist the torture? And I wouldn't have actually depicted what was happening to you, but it would be nasty. So it was a question of, I would have given you three options. You would have been able to lie, tell the truth, or say nothing, just not give in and just withstand the torture as long as you possibly could. And if you had said nothing, like if you just clammed up and just tried to be a hard ass about it, you would have had to make a petrification polymorph saving throw in order to withstand the torture, right? Like if you had failed that saving throw, you would have had to fess up everything. But if you withstood that second saving throw, you would have never given it up. And then after 3 days of solid torture, you would have been thrown into the pit to die. And out of frustration, he would have been super pissed off, but he would just be like, we're not going to get anything out of this guy. Right. So
couple questions, Mike, how many languages does Darius know? Two. Okay. That gives me something. Second, and no one better comment. No, John mentioned, we're still workshopping the head injury part of the injury table. But when you mentioned you're going to take the injuries, I'm very partialist, but it's a lot. I really want losing speech to be the permanent penalty on this that we're workshopping. If that had happened and you chose it, all dice rolls, all random, and you lost speech, what an amazing emergent moment there that would have been, because he couldn't get any information from you at that point because you're like concussed essentially, right? Like, oh, it's like, again, it's like, it's not a good situation, but it's an interesting outcome of a bad situation from that
choice.
That's
why I selected it, to be honest with you, David. Yeah. Part of me was like, hey, if I still have an opportunity to run, sure, I don't know what's going to happen. Obviously, that was foolish. Mort had blood in his eye, and he was ready to go. Sure. But you know, I thought that would be a more interesting thing, and just an emergent storytelling moment for there. I had like a whole thing like worked out, and I've been talking to these idiots on Discord about it, and Matt kept yucking my yum about it. But I'm like, what if we're gonna I was like, we could turn Garalad, like we could absolutely convince Garalad that we're not the bad guys here, and that, you know, he started this shit, and we can get him into that library. And so I had a whole idea like worked out in my head about how I was going to convince him to do that.
There was a route there. I'll tell you that much. There was a route.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because we've already demonstrated we can get in lots of places, right? We get in a lot of places that you didn't know about or that you didn't think that we would be able to get into. And then what is our real power structure here? Like, you want to be left alone. You want the monkeys to yourself. We're okay with that. We just want to get into the library, you know, like, anyway.
Well, and to note just a quick response to that, right? Like, we did learn from Trefko like a loose sense in the same way that we know about Cross and everyone else, an incentive structure, right? We know ISO specifically wanted a book. We know Garaled maybe does, or maybe wants to be left alone, is willing to help other people find things so long as they are, you know, isolationist enough for him or whatever. But that's a really interesting piece of information I don't know how to act on right now. But
well, remember, like from the beginning, right, we've been talking about each one of these factions as being driven by a primary motivation. Everybody has one simple thing. Garaled's was always like, what was he asking people about? What was he torturing people about? How did you find your way in here? Where, you know, where am I insecure? How, where's, you know, he has always been protectionist. Well, now, you know, I want to kill him because he cut my hand off, right? I want to kill him because he's evil and, you know, ensorcels people and stuff. So, you know, like he's definitely gotten on Avaricious's bad side, but his motivations are pure and simple and easy to understand. He wants defense. Goblins want to expand. He wants to defend. You know, the dragon wants business to flow. Estelle and the broken head wants business to flow, right? These motivators.
You're very right about Garaled. It's good insight, Matt. And it should also reinforce how large of a leap it was for him to leave his secure area and proactively go out and attempt to seek aid from an outside faction. It really, it should paint a picture to you how angry he is at you that he decided to do that, right? This recent incursion that you've done only further reinforced that, probably more so than any other time that you've been back there, because of the sheer amount of chaos that you just caused in the past couple of hours was intense. And you should know Garaled by now. Like, when you've got ghouls running around and you've got strange noises and you've got invisible people popping in and out and, you know, and what? And snakes. Poisonous snakes. And yeah, you know, it's just, and he knows it's all stemming from you, but he can't handle it all at once. You know what I mean? And so it's like, it's just an insane amount of chaos for a guy that just wants things quiet and to be left alone, you know?
Well, stay off my lawn. Everything will be fine.
He is.
And he's a NIMBY, and I never liked a NIMBY, so it's fine. But, but no, it's very interesting. In that, yes, Matt, 100% agree, right? Like, from the start, we understood that about him. It does make me very curious about what would allow him, what bargaining chip, for instance, to make the exception for Isocrates, whether by diplomacy or risk, right? If ISO is doing something for Alexia, we vaguely sense his desire not to have fucking, you know, the army to storm in may have been enough. Who knows, right? For him to say yes to ISO or ? Right. But that is that's a really interesting wrinkle in that desire. Also, it's just interesting that there's like a faction leader who's essentially like an anti-adventurer. Garaled exists. I mean, he's also like a torturing, you know, piece of shit. But taking that aside, Garaled essentially exists as the ultimate rejection of adventure, right? Do not come in here. Mm-hmm. Is the irresistible, right? Like, game design speed bump. I don't know. I don't know what to say beyond it, but it's fascinating.
Outside of just his, him being like, stay out of my yard, the problem is that so many paths that we've discovered lead right into his goddamn yard. Like for a guy that wants to just be left alone, he's got a lot of entrances into his area. You know what I'm saying?
And there's one to the east we don't even know about. I mean, we don't know where it is. We haven't gone out that way. But like, and here's another thing that struck me. And I've been thinking about this not only because of Lisbeth and like her spell list and that she's growing and stuff. He's casting spells that ain't druid spells. I mean, he's very much acting like a druid, but charming people, that's not a druidy thing.
From a different edition, though, because
could be it too.
The game was written for a different system.
Did we not determine he was an elf? Am I
shaped eyes, so he's either a full blown elf or a half elf. But he apparently isn't just abiding by the basic OSE, like, you know, because you know, he's a druid that's an elf. I'm not a druid that's an elf.
Well, I mean, they're also magic items that can let you cast spells that you may not normally. But
waggling his fingers, dude. He was waggling his fingers at me.
The way to sort of look at it mechanically is kind of picture it more like a 4E situation. You remember how like monsters in 4E didn't follow the same rules as PCs?
Yeah.
Like the exact rule is third edition. So even like monsters who were like spellcasters had a completely different stat block than any sort of PC spellcasters. So look at it that way. They do not follow the same rules as PCs.
Okay.
I don't know. It was really hard not to head east and go see what was in those unknown tunnels. I came back to the party, but boy, Mort sure loves to explore. I really wanted to go east.
Yeah. So that brings up a point too, is you've been here a number of times, but where you've sort of been focusing your attention has been sort of like the same areas all the time. Always be aware that there's much more to this level that you haven't actually seen. However, when you kind of question, you're like, what is the reason that we go to Plundertown? At least in my mind, the two things that, besides the Ruby Throne, obviously, but, what has immense usefulness for you, is the laboratory and the library, right? Are the two things that have use to you and have been shown that Garilad doesn't really give two shits about, really. Right. So, Mike, your whole plan about what Darius was going to attempt to talk to Garilad was actually very, very solid. And I was actually kind of looking forward to that playing out should it happen. But no, it's fine. Your course of action was totally reasonable. But be aware that, at least from what I remember, you guys you probably have a better memory than I do about this, but I believe you caved in that secret entrance to the laboratory that you came in from before.
No, the monkeys.
Or they barricaded it up. Yeah. Yeah. So,
I guess it was a secret. The staircase down from the surface.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
We still haven't looked at the Hellraiser box either.
And also keep in mind, too, that the Garilad's preferred way to leave, what he calls the Druid's Retreat, he intimated that through part of his dealings with the Setites that they now have access to that as well.
Yeah.
His first reaction when he realized that shit was going down, he was like, go get the Setites. They're probably in the retreat. Go get them. Right.
Yeah.
Which makes me ask some questions. I mean, we determined that the ladder up did not go to the Broken Head, correct? Because Estelle didn't go that way to return home. So where does that lead?
It might. She just may not know.
Fair.
She may not know that part, right?
But fingers knew it.
One entrance to the bear cave, which we think is probably some sort of Garilad-like guard, right?
Yeah.
One entrance to the gladiator school. One entrance to his tunnel complex, which is weird because it wasn't like it was designed for him to get easy access to it. It's literally a hole in the roof that he has to climb up, whatever. And then at least one other one that we didn't discover, where the Minotaur came from and where those two adventurers were from that we scared away. It was because of those adventurers that were down there were part of the Five Fingers of Destiny, right?
Correct.
And so we just assumed that they had come from the Broken Head. I thought we'd heard that they said that they were from the Broken Head.
They said it, but that doesn't mean they took a direct route, like
exactly
head down that hallway.
But the reason I pose that curiosity, right, is if like the nature of these caves change from our chaos, we'll say, with Garilad, right? Whether it be because we learned the baboons were all in there when they weren't in Plungertown, or because the Setites have access now, et cetera, et cetera. What negotiations, allegiances, armistices are required in the caves for people other than Garilad and his minions and the Setites to be in there.
Yeah, I mean,
that is an existential question. Right?
Oh, sure. If the Setites are in there in any strength, I think it belongs to them now.
Well, sure.
Honestly.
Well, you know that that. As far as that level goes, like, you guys have hewn very closely to Garilad's own path, which he was careful to demarcate for himself.
Yeah. Right?
which should basically clue you in that Garlat himself, despite the fact that he was very protectionist about that route, and that's what he was torturing people to find out, like, how did they get information about that place? Because that place is mine. The fact that he had to mark his own path through there, it shows that he himself considers it to be dangerous as well.
Yeah.
I mean, there are other places to go there that that he dare not tread, right? Basically.
And if he thought... What's that?
It means he's got infravision. That's how we saw his code, supporting our possible half-elf theory about him.
Maybe. I mean, interesting. What I was thinking there is that if that was a direct route to, you know, the Setites, he would could have gone that way instead of going across the surface.
Right,
like when he wanted to go talk to the Setites, he just could have gone through the retreat. Right. But that implies that it's either really dangerous or it's not a direct route.
I agree. I don't think it is a direct route. That's why he didn't go that way. I'm saying that if he expects there to be Setites in there, it means he's given them information about those tunnels, and they're in there, not looking for us. They're in there claiming territory for themselves and exploring and looking for stuff. And they're in there in strength, probably.
And remember where he went and talked to those Setites at the West Gate.
Right.
Right. He went into the West Gate, right? Yeah. He went into the West Gate and talked to the Setites. And that's where he worked out a deal. Right. So you can draw your own conclusions from that.
Which also gives us a sense of like scope there. There's from the cliffside entrance to there, it's like a good bit of land, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the Setites are desperately in need of a plasma cannon or two, I think, at this point. But, don't we all? I don't think we're going to have any normal warfare or conflict with them that is going to go well with us in the same way that the apes have not. And so we have to get real savvy, like we are with Cross. We have to treat the Setites almost like a unit that is a dragon themselves, right? Mm-hmm. And I mean, I always say the Cold War thing, but truly, we got to like, well, how do we create a dynamic that becomes disincentivizing, even if it isn't hostile, right? Like, I don't know. We'll figure it out, well, I guess. But
attrition does a faction have to have before it collapses or has to adapt, right? Like, we, at this point, who knows, Matt, how many monkeys you managed to kill between your ghoul trick and the poison snakes. It had to be significant, not to mention we just robbed them of like one of their three, possibly, I think it's just three big four-armed baboons, right? It's just Sisko, Irsko, and Trefko, right? Like those are the only three. So he's lost one of those. He's lost, I don't even know, we killed like 13 monkeys in that one ice blast way back when at the Druid's Retreat. And then who knows how many more got dropped today? And I don't know, John, I imagine is keeping track of that stuff, but... Mm-hmm. At what point does Garlad's power base start to crumble? And then one thing that I was excited about and then became less excited about, is when he was trading that head slaver to the Setites, I was like, oh, well, that's interesting because that guy goes back to home. He's still not going to be happy with Garlad because I'm sure Garlad ran him through the ringer while he was a prisoner. But then John intimated that that guy was actually like, in the midst of a power struggle with the guy who's actually on the throne of the Setites right now. So it's probably like just giving like the two little lost princes back to the king.
The usurper of the Guild of Service is probably where, you know, his.
Sure, but you know what tells us if we also utilize our goblin info is that none of these factions are in a stable state because both the goblins and the Setites have, or at least the Guild of Service have, contested leadership, right? There are factions that are trying to internally undermine these things, not just externally.
So,
which is, oh my God, that's layered.
It's a good point. And also keep in mind the time frame here, right? So if you're saying that the Guild of Service has some sort of internal conflict going, probably all the way to the top, right? Remember too that you saw who is the person that's claiming to be the chief slaver was in imprisonment in Plundertown by the baboons before your whole ruckus on the Long Stair, right? So all of that embarrassment and fallout from the Long Stair incursion that you guys did, that all went back to a guild that apparently was actively undergoing a power struggle. At least that's the way it sure seems like that he claimed sure. that it was that he heard Garlad say it was a usurper is the words right. that this gunner guy was saying. There was a usurper that was had taken over. So just be aware that you may have compounded an already delicate situation at the Guild of Service because of your actions on the Longstair.
100%. And again, like not to go too meta, but just to, I don't know, from a political standpoint, like what are the major factions we've encountered and how many of them are stable? Alexia's brother is fighting her sort of like leadership, right? Mm-hmm. The Setites have the Guild of Service at least has a contested leadership. The Goblins have a contested leadership. The Beastmen, maybe not, but there's like, we know at least one has defected, right? And who knows about the Trolls, et cetera, et cetera. Now, what is that to us? I don't know, right? But what we know is like there is a theming here of, though they may be powerful on the surface, you know, as a like united front and war, et cetera, internally, there are cracks in all of these so far, which yeah. is a really interesting opportunity, however we might like take advantage of it. Right.
Oh yeah. Each like has their levers line. To pull, right. That's exactly what you guys should be looking for. If you want to start to exert power over them, you know what I mean? 100%.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's super interesting.
Yeah. Good stuff. Crazy, all right. We could probably call it there. You guys have a lot to think about what you guys want to do next time. But you've got a big four-armed white baboon on your side, so that's pretty rocking.
Yeah.